Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Lu, speaking to you after the Toronto Raptors just overcame the Utah Jazz, coming back from yet another dismal first half effort, coming back from yet another double-digit deficit to win, this time by a score of 122-108 to extend their win streak to five games. Let's get this out of the way right away. Fred VanVleet, I wouldn't even say he's making his case for All-Star, because he's already done that all season. He's been playing at that level. But what he did today in the third quarter is absurd. It's genuinely one of the best quarters in Raptors history by one any player. And the fact that Fred was doing it consecutively, play after play, when the Raptors were dead in the water, you thought at the third quarter mark coming out of halftime, make a push, but instead the Jazz are still making plays. Nick is getting a tech. Guys are frustrated. They're not really eating into this deficit against a very shorthanded Jazz team, which, to be honest, Hassan Whiteside was the most recognizable player on that roster. Past that, it was Eric Paschal, who was legitimately looking like LeBron at the start of the game. That's how bad the Raptors defense was. And then hardship exception guys like Elijah Hughes, who was coming in and hitting seven threes and dunking all over the team. So the Raptors were getting really frustrated. It was looking like they were going to give this game away. And that's when Fred took over with, again, like I said, one of the greatest quarters that any Raptor in franchise history has ever put together. Because let me just read to you the stat line in the third quarter alone. 24 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, a block, 0 turnovers on a perfect 8 of 8 shooting from the field, 3 of 3 from the 3-point arc, and 5 of 5 from the free throw. At one point, he scored 15 straight points to turn the Raptors from being dead in the water to being up. And then over the stretch, when you watch back the tape, which if you did not catch this game, stop what you're doing right now and go watch that play. Go watch that sequence. Go watch that third quarter sequence, specifically over about a 4-minute stretch where, you know, the Raptors, again, had very little going for them, okay? And then they run a standard inbound play for Fred coming out of off the baseline inbound where he curls. He doesn't even get to the corner. The Jazz did a pretty good job defending it. Fred curls to about the elbow area, gets a step on his guy, pulls up for two. That's his first basket of the run. Then after the Raptors get lucky, because the Jazz get a wide open three, they miss it. They didn't do a lot of that today. They hit a lot of threes today. After they get a wide open three, the Raptors get the rebound. They give it to Fred. Fred with a crossover, shakes his guy, creates about 2-3 feet of separation, pull up for three. That's a 5-0 run. Then the Raptors get a stop. Fred gets the ball, pushes it end to end, drives through about 3 Jazz players, draws the foul at the basket, gets 2 free throws, makes both free throws. That's a 7-0 run. Then Fred coming down the floor in transition, pull up 3. Clearly there was a bit of a breakdown for the Jazz defensively there, because the one guy you would want to find is Fred. That's a 10-0 run. Then the Jazz are trying to operate. Fred doubles the post. He makes the steal. He strips the play. Gets the ball, drives it, end of the floor, and gets an and-one drive. So that's 13-0 run. And then, on the ensuing possession, the Jazz are trying to operate. Fred steals it again. Fred brings the ball up, surveys the court. The Jazz actually got back in transition this time. He comes around the screen. There's space in the mid-range area. Pull up to the Raptors, finally go up in the lead. That's absurd. Now, the Jazz, you know, get back to sort of playing regular offense at that point. They weren't sort of just making mistakes all the time. But on the ensuing possession, Fred gets the ball. He drives, and he gets a layup to go. He sneaks it in right underneath of Hassan Whiteside's shot challenge. Obviously, Hassan is a premium shot blocker. The Raptors, it felt like all night, were afraid to drive into the paint because of the fact that the Jazz were playing zone, because of the fact that they had Whiteside inside. But the one guy who wasn't afraid was Fred VanVleet, the smallest man in the building, quite possibly, gets the ball, gets the layup over Whiteside, which is, you know, something that a lot of the Raptors weren't doing today. That's 17 straight points for Fred. And then Fred, man, so Eric Paschal was really torching these guys. And he made a spin move, but who was in the lane except for Fred VanVleet, who has developed a sudden, you know, taste for blocking shots. And I'm not even talking about stripping the ball when guys go up to shoot, because that's usually how Fred's blocks end up arising. I'm not really sure those are blocks. Those are more steals for me. But nevertheless, this coming on the heels of his skying to jump against Sandro Mamushkevili, he does the same thing here to Eric Paschal, jumps up, meets him at the top, blocks him, collects the rebound, goes the other way, leads the fast break, and he feeds Chris Boucher trailing on the play for a layup. That's the only time in that stretch where Fred wasn't the guy scoring for himself. Then coming back on the floor, down the floor after the Jazz scored, they hit a three to sort of take back momentum. Fred looks so exhausted. This is the last minute. Clearly he's exhausted. So much energy by this point. And he just decides, yeah, forget this, man. I'm just going to pull up from 35 feet with about 4 seconds left. Forget trying to string out the clock. I'm just going to pull up for 35. A super long three. He makes it. The Raptors go back up two. And then just for fun, he steals the ball on the last second play where the Jazz had about 2 seconds to go the full length of the court, which you might scoff at and say, well, come on, that's, you know, yeah, you got to steal there. But what does that really do? No, that does something. Because at the end of the second quarter, the Jazz had about 1.5 seconds to go the length of the floor. The Raptors don't cover up. They get the inbound pass all the way out to half. And yes, it's a lucky shot to make a half-court shot. But if you leave a guy wide open 1.5 seconds, I'm sorry, there's still time on the clock. You still got to be working. So Fred, make sure to not repeat the same mistake for the Raptors. Gets the steal to secure it. I mean, it was mesmerizing to watch. The amount of energy that it took, the amount of guts that it took, the amount of skill, it's every reason. If you want to make the case for Fred VanVleet for the All-Star game, there's so many things you could talk about, but I challenge any coach in the NBA to watch that four-minute clip of what Fred was doing in that stretch and leave Fred off the ballot. Because it's not even about the plays that he was making, it was the leadership that he was showing. Because the Raptors had nothing all night. Imagine if the Raptors lost to this game where there was no Rudy Gobert, there was no Donovan Mitchell, there was no Joe Ingles, there's no Bogdan Bogdanovich, there's no Jordan Clarkson. Like, there's nobody, right? Rudy Gay is just chilling there on the sideline in a jacket. Imagine you lose that game after you've won four straight on your home floor, right? Imagine the frustration that would be exhibited. But instead, the Raptors get to celebrate, going two games over 500, going on this five-game win streak, and we get to celebrate Fred VanVleet, who also, by the way, completes his first career triple-double. He finished the game 37 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. He got the 10th rebound off one of his own misses, a very rare miss in the second half. I think he might have only missed one shot in the second half because he was making some jumpers too in the fourth quarter when he checked back in. He realized that his own shot was off, I think from three, and he ran in, and again, as the smallest guy on both teams, chases down the offensive rebound in between like four Jazz players and gets that rebound. And then he was two assists shy, and he got those very quickly at the end of the game, right before he was getting subbed out for a job well done, where he drove the lane, drew two defenders to him, slipped it back out to Precious Achiuwa, cutting behind him on the play. Precious makes the floater, which is not a guarantee, definitely not a guarantee, even though that's a good look for Precious, but he makes the floater. One assist shy, the Raptors come down. Fred runs to pick and roll. The Jazz, for some reason, switch, but there didn't feel like, it feels like they miscommunicated on the switch, because I don't think the Jazz really wanted to switch. But in any case, they screw up their defensive coverages, and Fred just sees this, a momentary lapse in the Jazz defense. He throws the lob up to Precious. Precious runs in behind a Hassan Whiteside, who is very tall, very big, very capable of blocking shots, but not that mobile. So as long as you can throw it over him, he's not going to be able to turn that quickly. And Precious finishes a lob dunk for the 10th assist. The Jazz call timeout. The Raptors are able to celebrate Fred. He gets to sit on the bench for the last 2 minutes. Raptors get to empty the third unit. And wow, what a performance from Fred VanVleet. You have to give this man all the credit in the world. I'm not even saying he single-handedly won this game, because I think there's a lot of other guys who really stepped up their game in the second half. Clearly, the first half was another one to forget, just like when the Raptors gave up 77 points in the first half against Milwaukee. It was a similarly difficult struggle for the Raptors defensively in the first half, so I'll cover that later. But really, the second half, a lot of guys stepped up and a lot of guys contributed, but most of all, it took Fred VanVleet to jumpstart that car. And wow, I mean, again, just go watch the tape. It is so exhilarating to watch what he did. Kyle Lowry was also watching. You know, obviously, you know, that's Fred is his protege. And you could see how much of Kyle was in Fred's performance today. It's a bit cliche because that's the, you know, the standard in which all Raptors are going to be compared to, especially all Raptors point guards. But can you imagine a better successor for Kyle Lowry than Fred VanVleet? Look at the hustle and the guts that he took in terms of leading the team tonight in the third quarter. The most immediate thing that comes to mind is what Kyle did in the 30-point comeback. Now, of course, this is not the same thing. The Jazz were playing with only 8 guys, and a lot of these guys you don't even know. But at the same time, it had all the same elements in terms of the consecutive plays made, the assists, the defense, the big shots, the gutsy drives, everything you'd possibly want. Kyle has, you know, obviously been this gift for the franchise that blessed, you know, the Raptors for 9 years, 8 of them hugely successful. But, you know, to leave behind, you know, all the knowledge and all the sort of little tricks that he taught Fred, and of course, obviously Fred, in terms of his own work, to go and challenge a guy like Kyle and actually become a successor is just amazing. And Kyle tweeted after the game, Fred VanVleet triple-double, about time, congrats, hashtag NBA All-Star. Kyle Lowry is out here pushing for Fred VanVleet for NBA All-Star. And why not? Because he totally deserves it. It was such a beautiful performance to watch. And again, the Raptors needed it because they were not playing well, man. The first half, the Raptors, I mean, let's just get this right out of the way. I would say it was borderline unprofessional, what the Raptors were doing. The Jazz scored 40 points in the first quarter. And again, let me just list to you the Jazz players who are playing today. Eric Paschal, Elijah Hughes, Hassan Whiteside, Trent Forrest, Jared Butler, Malik Fitz. This guy's really named Malik Fitz. Okay, all right. Daniel House Jr., who just got signed, and Udoka Azubuike. Norvell Powell got in for 2 minutes. He didn't in garbage time. I didn't even realize he was available. So that's who was out there, and they scored 40 points, and that includes 17 from Eric Paschal, who finished the game with 29 points. He had 17 points in the first quarter. That was a season high for him already. Apparently, he was averaging 3 points per game coming into this game. And of course, you know, end of the bench guys, you know, you can't look at their numbers per game. You know, if they only play like a couple of minutes, it's going to really bring it down. But I mean, 3 points is 3 points. This guy was averaging 3 points coming into this game, and the Raptors allowed him to score 17 in the first quarter alone. This guy was dunking. This guy was flexing. This guy was yelling at guys. This guy's yelling at Pascal Siakam, I'm the better Pascal tonight. Like, that's unacceptable. And when you look at sort of what the Raptors were doing, I mean, it was a joke. There was one play at the end, the final minute of the first quarter. There was about 35 seconds left. The Raptors have the ball. That's absolutely an opportunity to go 2-for-1. But the Raptors don't go 2-for-1. Do you know why they don't go 2-for-1? Well, first off, OG Anunoby is literally just standing on one wing, tying his shoelaces for about 10 seconds. So they don't get the 2-for-1. There's no advantage there. The whole area of the floor is dead because the guy's just tying his shoelace. What is that? Tie your shoelace outside. Tie your shoelace before you come into the game. If your shoelace comes undone, stand off to the side and do it. Don't stand in the middle of the floor. The spacing is completely ruined. So they don't get the 2-for-1. And instead, what happens is the Raptors drive. They start their offense late. They weren't really set up for a play. And then it turns out that the Raptors get a shot clock violation on an opportunity they should get a 2-for-1. Just ridiculous. Ridiculous type of stuff that you're seeing. You know, like Paschal shoots a free throw. He shouldn't even have gotten to the free throw line, but the Raptors play sloppy defense. They give him 2 free throws. He misses the second free throw. and he gets his own rebound under the basket. Nobody touches him, and then he dunks it. What is that? Nobody's even boxing out the guy shooting the free throw, right? Like, it was that kind of stuff that the Raptors were doing, not taking this game seriously, being super late on rotations, giving up way too much in terms of dribble penetration. And that's the result. 40 points to the Utah Jazz. And I can't even say this is the Utah Jazz. This is just a random group of guys. And so it was frustrating. And then meanwhile, on the other end, the Jazz were doing a smart thing, which similar to what the Raptors did against Cleveland, the one game where they had to play in these circumstances, right? Where they had all their regular guys either out with injury or out with COVID or whatever. So they go zone for like the entire game. Now, it's probably a little bit more effective going zone with a legit 7-footer like Hassan Whiteside in the middle, camping out, no 3-second defensive calls pretty much all game. It's probably more effective going zone with a guy like that in the center who's able to block shots versus like I don't even remember who the Raptors started. I guess Chris Boucher or DJ Wilson or Toru or all these other guys, like, but still they go zone for the whole game. So one way to unlock the zone is to knock down some threes, because you get the ball in the middle, you kick it back out, there's some wide open threes. The Raptors just couldn't get wide open threes to fall. Fred was 1 of 6 from three to start the game. Scotty Barnes was 0 for 3 from three today. Gary Trent was 0 for 6 from three and a lot of these were wide open looks. OG was the one guy knocking down some threes, and then Pascal gave you 2 threes as well. But the Raptors just couldn't hit threes. At one point, they were 5 of 25 from three. It was super ugly to watch, and the Raptors just couldn't capitalize. Meanwhile, it was extremely frustrating because the Jazz were shooting about 50% from three. Again, Elijah Hughes, who they signed, I'm pretty sure on a hardship exception, came in. Apparently, they got Ray Allen on a hardship exception because that's who he was playing like today. He wasn't a hardship exception guy, was he? He's already played 9 games for them? Okay, well, in any case, he came in, played 41 minutes, hit 7 threes. He was knocking them all down today, and the Raptors just couldn't really get it going. Like, there was no stretch where they were like, let's go to the bench, let's play some zone, let's do this and that. Nothing was working. Like, I'm not even kidding. I take pretty detailed notes usually on the games. I was so frustrated in the second quarter, I have 5 things in the notes. And all, 3 of them were about Scotty, because Scotty was super involved in this game because of the fact that the Raptors, again, faced a zone this whole time. So they needed somebody to play in the middle of the zone. That's all the other way to get through the zone is you get the ball into the man in the middle, let him make some plays. And Scotty did a decent job of that, whether that was the floater shooting over the top of the contest or sort of making the extra pass back out to the perimeter. Maybe you have more stats if guys were knocking down shots, but regardless, I thought Scotty did a pretty decent job in that front. But you can't overlook the fact that he was still 5 of 14. The 0 for 3 from 3 was definitely hurt them. The Raptors definitely needed some 3-point shooting from their guys today, and they finally got it from Fred, and then, Gary came around a little bit, and OG, was a little bit better, but the 3-point shot just wasn't there for them. So when you combine really, really poor shooting with a lack of care on the defensive end, that's how you get down to a team that you shouldn't be down against. And I was really curious to see what the Raptors' response in the third quarter would have been. And the Raptors played better in the third quarter. It's hard to doubt that. But really, they weren't really getting anywhere. They weren't even eating into the lead. And each time they were like, okay, they score 2-3 times in a row, they get it down to single digits. Let's see them like kind of string together some more pressure. Nah, the Jazz are just going to drive the ball, get in the middle of the paint. They were so good on little floaters and hook shots or whatever, and they were just making sort of all sorts of runners. And if it wasn't that, then they would just kick it back out to a guy hitting a three. So it just felt like they couldn't make that progress until Fred did what he did. And thankfully he did, because this game could have been and was very frustrating for quite a while. But really, if you look at the bigger picture, I guess the Raptors did make it quite interesting. I don't think Raptors Jazz specifically, given the guys who are out for Utah, should have been this entertaining. But, the Raptors did make this, one of the more unforgettable games of the year simply based on the fact that, you know, Fred did what he did and the Raptors, for the second game in a row, came back from double digits. Now, of course, the thing is, you would definitely want to see this team get off to better starts. I don't know if it's because of the fact that they're playing, you know, a very, very depleted opponent, whether that's them playing, feeling comfortable on a win streak. They just feel like they're, you know, hey, we're really nice. Like, we're on a four-game win streak. We can just do whatever we want here. Or if it's just a case of, you know, it's an empty building, it's hard to sort of get yourself going. Whatever the case is, just they have to cut it out, because like the way they've started the first halves tonight and also against Milwaukee is just kind of unacceptable, and they have to cut that out. Like, this is something serious. You're not going to come back every game like this, right? And when you don't, you're going to be really kicking yourself for not getting yourself a better chance to compete. And so, you know, that's really the biggest takeaway, I think, from the coaching staff. And they'll probably, I'm sure that's what they'll be saying to their guys. And really, it's up to your starters to come out and play some defense, right? And I think your starters didn't really set the tone for you until the second half. So they need to do better on that front. But either way, what a performance from Fred. And to be honest, like, he did get some decent supporting, you know, play from some of his teammates. I touched on Scottie Barnes. So he had 11 points in 31 minutes. There was a scare at one point where, you know, he went in for a drive. Whiteside was there, and I think he banged knees with Whiteside. He sat on the bench. He had to get massaged a little bit. And there was a little bit of, like, for a moment, it's like, oh, my God, is everything okay? He was okay. He came back into the game. I thought Scottie was pretty energetic throughout the game. I thought his defense was you know, not necessarily that much worse than most of the other guys, quite honestly. They put him at center once again. So, you know, he had to hold up Whiteside quite a bit. It wasn't like Whiteside got that many points off tonight. 7 points on five shots in 30 minutes. You'll totally live with that, considering the fact that he's that one walking mismatch. But the Jazz did do a really good job of, okay, so they get the ball to Whiteside. The Raptors, you know, Scottie tries to hold him and push him, keep him in position. Then someone else comes over to help. But the Jazz did a pretty good job of playing out of that and kicking it out, and guys swing and getting an open shot or playing on the catch and driving against the closeout and scoring. But still, I thought Scottie did a pretty good job defensively. And then again, in the middle of the zone, he got in there quite a few times. Now, I think 5 of 14 is unfortunate, but obviously three of those from the three, so those aren't really part of him trying to attack the zone. They're really looking at 5 of 11 from two. A couple of those, he kind of came up short. He got his own offensive rebound. He finished. So I actually didn't mind, you know, seeing Scottie in the middle of the zone. What I'd like to see from him, though, is the fact that he has the scoring touch from there, right? That's something that we saw at the very start of the season, is that he has that ability to score from that second box area, inside the paint, little, like, even if he doesn't fully have his foot down, he doesn't really need to, considering his arms are so long, he's able to shoot over the top most times, and then just rely on his touch. And even though his touch, I don't even think it was that good today, he was still able to score relatively efficiently in the two-point range. But the other thing is also just, he has that ability to find the next pass. 6 assists for Scottie Barnes today. And yeah, I mean, I think one concern, maybe, you know, if you were just really going to nitpick in the last couple of games, is, okay, Scottie's usage has been really down. Scottie's usage has been down, right? Clearly, he's playing a role that was, you know, helping other guys sort of get going. But in this game, it depends on the matchups, right? Like, the Jazz weren't playing your standard pick-and-roll defense. They weren't, you know, switching. They weren't like the Clippers were. They weren't, you know, playing drop coverage like the Bucks were, you know, all this other stuff. They were playing the zone for, like, the entire game. So that requires you to play differently. And so that's where I wouldn't worry so much about specifically how the shot distribution is in the starting lineup over, like, let's say, you know, one game to the next, because it really just depends on the context. And in this context, they're playing that zone, so there's not as much opportunity for Pascal to drive downhill. His numbers are much more pedestrian today. There's not as many chances for other guys. Even Fred didn't really have a good chance getting downhill in a half-court setting. Most of his plays at the basket were came off of sequences in transition. So you kind of do need to sort of play strategically, and that's where you sort of look at the versatility of this group, because you can play that one way, but you can also play this other way, where you get the ball to Barnes, get him to make some decisions in the middle of the zone, and it's encouraging. It really was very encouraging to see the way he played today, you know, and hopefully everything's good with the knee moving forward. But, you know, I think the Raptors got some good performances from OG as well, some good performance from Pascal. Gary Trent had another tough night, but he turned it around when the Raptors needed it the most. And then the bench. And the bench really deserves a lot of love, which is not something I said on the podcast many times this season. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the Raptors Reaction Podcast on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. When we come back, more discussion on the Raptors' 122-108 win over the Utah Jazz. Welcome back to the Raptors Reaction Podcast for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu. Continue to recap the Raptors' thrilling 122-108 win over the Utah Jazz. Yes, Utah didn't have like pretty much every player that you would associate with the Utah Jazz, but it was still thrilling because of the fact that the Raptors played poorly in the first half. Fred did his thing. Wow, the Raptors scored 45 points in the third quarter, and then they closed it out strong. So already showed a lot of love to Fred in the first half of the show. Get him to the All-Star game. Talked about Scottie's role as well. Let's talk more about the other guys. So to me, what the Raptors got from Chris Boucher and Precious Achiuwa off the bench was perfect. The Raptors continue to get such good results from playing these two guys together off the bench. This was the start of the Raptors turning it around. That game against the Clippers, they were going big with this group. The Knicks game, they were going big with this group. And when you're talking about the Raptors going to these all-forward lineups, which it didn't play as much today for one reason or another, they kept the shooter out there. I guess they just had really needed some offense to sort of keep up with what the Jazz were doing. But, when you're talking about the fact that you're going to these big lineups, a lot of that is just you need your bigs to really – you know, hold it down for you. And the combination of Chris and Precious, they've been great. I think they've given the Raptors obviously a lot of activity and a lot of length, rebounding, shot blocking in the middle of the floor, but it's also given the Raptors the ability to switch everything. You're seeing the Raptors able to contain the triple penetration a lot better when those two guys are out there. And then the underrated thing about these two guys is just how much they get up and out ahead of the defense for transition opportunities. You're consistently seeing these guys finishing plays at the rim in transition, which is not all that common for bigs to do it because of the fact that they're slower. They're usually the ones deepest on the floor. So, you know, you're not necessarily always seeing them, maybe like trailers. But I think for these guys, like a lot of the times, they're almost like leading the break. Sometimes they'll even fast break to each other. And that's kind of unique, but the combinations just work great. And I think you can always nitpick with these guys in terms of, okay, you know, Precious will miss a couple of layups, then Chris will, you know, jump sometimes when he doesn't need to, or, you know, the threes, you know, they're not usually the greatest threat for him, 0 for 2 from 3 for Chris, 0 for 1 for Precious. But the energy collectively that these two guys brought was incredible. There was a great shot on the broadcast where after about the 5 minute mark of the fourth quarter, where I think Chris Boucher had played about probably 10 straight minutes, the camera panned to him. He like, I'm not even kidding when I say he crawled to the bench. He crawled to the end of the bench, collapsed, and just looked so tired. It was actually kind of comical to see, but you have to show him so much respect for that because he played his heart out. Like the effort and the intensity that he was playing with was incredible. You know, it was a situation where, he was changing into the floor. He was running the four offensive rebounds in 20 minutes. He was winning extra possessions. He was finishing plays. You know, he was just doing it all. And I thought the defense, again, with Chris and Precious, yeah, they haven't played like the best opponents. A lot of star players have been out during the stretch. But I think regardless of who is out there, you kind of need some solid defense from your bigs. And they have been providing it consistently. Precious, I just continue to really love his defense, especially on switches. He's really been able to play on the perimeter. His feet are really good on that front. He also blocked a shot tonight. You got what, two steals from Chris. You got a steal and a block from Precious. And both of these guys, when you look at the plus minus, man, plus 12 for Chris, plus 14 for Precious, even plus 12 for Ken Birch, which I'm a little surprised by, but I think some of that overlapped with Fred's little outburst. So I don't know how much specifically Ken was the one contributing there. He was solid, don't get me wrong, but I think he's been, since returning, because he's, you know, Precious and Ken kind of returned at the same time. Like, since returning, I feel like Ken still is dealing with that knee thing a little bit. He just doesn't look as sharp as he normally has in the past. So he's probably been the one underperforming the most, but it doesn't really matter. Nick can always turn to sort of the Boucher-Precious combo. And I think really the biggest issue there is spacing in a half-court setting, because the Raptors, look, the Jazz were going to zone anybody they were playing against today just because of the fact that they were inexperienced and all these guys were kind of new to each other or whatever. They haven't really practiced together, so whatever, just play zone. Everyone knows how to play zone. But I could see, though, teams still going zone against Chris and Precious in these lineups just because you have two guys who aren't really threats to shoot. Yeah, Chris can make some. Precious can make some too, but teams aren't going to change their defense whatsoever. They're going to prioritize protecting the basket. But the bigger thing is just if you play really good defense, you're going to get a lot of chances to score in transition. And I think Nick is always going to lead with, okay, if I have given the choice between I can play this lineup that can definitely score but can't guard, or this lineup that can guard but can't necessarily score, he'll play with the lineup that can guard for sure. Because you can play off of your defense. You can defend, you can score off your defense way more than you could defend off your offense. Yes, you can make the other team take it out of bounds and you can keep them out of transition, but realistically, if your half-court defense is not there, you're never going to win games. So, great moment for Chris. And the camera went back to Chris like 30 seconds later just to sort of check in on him, because he was genuinely looked like he needed oxygen, and he was still looking like he needed oxygen. I mean, that man gave it his all. And again, I can't stress this enough, but Chris Boucher has really turned it around over the last month or so, averaging close to 12 points and 8 rebounds. Yes, there's a couple of games in there that sort of hold up the average, but realistic, when you watch the games, he's not making as many mistakes. His energy is like exploding off the screen, so much so that you could see him physically tired. I don't think I've seen an athlete that tired outside of guys who like run marathons or like, you know, whatever. But he's just been playing really well. The Raptors have been able to play him more at four. Now that they're healthy, they're able to play him with another big, sort of take the load off. Because you know that when he's the only center out there, sometimes, you know, he can get pushed around a bit. But you have Precious in there for a little extra muscle, and combo's working great. And honestly, the bench, Nick has gotten decent production from the bench. And this is during a time where Svi has been out today. He was cleared. He played 2 minutes in garbage time, didn't do anything other than missing a layup. Yuta, I didn't see him today. Maybe he's still in protocols. We'll see. But, you know, he hasn't had these guys. Nick has also chosen not to play his guards. And essentially, it's very rare to see this in the NBA. But 6, 7, and 8 in his rotation off the bench are all centers. And yet, it's working. So I think that, two things. One, I think the Raptors could definitely use some help in terms of guard play. That's part of the reason why Fred has such great net rating stats, because net rating calculates like how good the team is with you on the floor versus how good the team is with you off the floor. And the Raptors with Fred off the floor have been awful, because they have no backup guards really to come in and spell him. So, you know, the delta there is going to look even higher. But still, you know, I think the Raptors can use some guard help just to go with this group, because if they can get that along with the defense that the bench is providing, you know, it's already working right now. The defense alone from the bench is starting to sort of turn games for the Raptors in favor of the Raptors. If they can add some scoring as well, that would really help. And, you know, listen, obviously everybody's looking for a little bit of bench scoring off the at the trade deadline. It's like in baseball, everyone's looking for like a lefty reliever out of the bullpen kind of thing, just to add one guy or whatever. But I genuinely think that it's an easy position upgrade. It shouldn't cost all that much. And the standard is, can you get a guy to come in and play guard better than Svi or Malachi or Delano this year? And there's a lot of guards in the NBA playing better than... I mean, like, look, listen, if the hardship ends for Utah eventually and they don't want Elijah Hughes, bring in Elijah Hughes. He hit 7 threes today. I don't think Svi's hit 7 threes in the last month. Like, it's really on that level. In terms of the other starters, I thought Pascal had an interesting game. Like, it didn't feel like he had everything going. He was also the primary defender against Eric Paschal, and Paschal definitely got the best of him a few times. But I thought he really stepped it up, though, when he really needed to, because the start of the fourth quarter, that's when Fred was super tired. He went to the bench after giving his all, you know, in that miraculous third quarter stretch. So somebody to carry that group, and it was Pascal. You know, he made two drives to the basket, where he was able to get up on the rim and it bounced in, a couple of transition opportunities as well, including a very, very strange play where Chris Boucher picked off the pass at half court. So it was a 3-on-1 fast break. He had Gary in one corner and Pascal running the lane. And for some reason, he decided to kick it to Gary in the corner. That wasn't the greatest shot. You should definitely get a layup on a 3-on-1. I understand if Pascal is covered, you know, that might not necessarily be the easiest pass to make, but you get them pass early, bring the defender over, Pascal gives it back to you for a lob or whatever. That should be a layup. In any case, it became a layup anyway because Gary turned down the three, which might be one of the few times Gary has done that all year, but he wasn't shooting well for a stretch there. He was able to drive inside and then get it back to Pascal, who was, I guess, had deep post position considering he was about to have a transition layup, but he was able to catch it, go out for a little floater. Pascal just did enough in that stretch there. He also drove for some free throws. He also set up a couple other guys to score as well. And yeah, like I think that stretch right there really helped to secure the game, to sort of maintain the momentum for the Raptors. I also think fatigue played a factor for Utah, considering the fact that they're on the road. A lot of these guys are new. You know, they were only playing, what, 8 guys in their rotation. So, like, guys will get tired eventually. But, yeah, I thought Pascal really led that group. I thought Gary led that group, too, which is interesting because Gary had a tough game overall. 4-12 from the field, 2-8 from 3. I'm not really sure what's going on with 3-point stroke right now. He's getting some really open looks from deep, and he got a lot of those tonight, but he just couldn't get those to drop until the fourth quarter where he made 2 threes. His first make in 7 attempts was a very contested look. It was a catch-and-shoot, but it was super contested, but Gary at least got his feet down, was able to rise up, shoot slightly over the shot contest. I thought it was a bad shot, but he made it, so it was definitely a good shot. And then another play where the Raptors were able to execute well off their inbound plays, especially out of the baseline inbound plays, whether they're running it for Gary or they're running it to Fred to get an open shot. They've done such a good job of executing on those sequences. The Raptors are really, really efficient at that. So you got to credit Nick. You got to credit the whole coaching staff for, you know, getting these guys prepared for these situations where they can get catch and shoot opportunities for these two guards who are very good at catching and shooting. And Gary's able to get a open look off of inbound, probably 2 screens, get into the corner, and then knocking that down. And I think that pushed the lead up to about 10. Fred came back in at that point, you know, bounced in a pull up 2, you know, because when you're red hot, like, you're just gonna get all the bounces, a fadeaway 2, and that kind of just, along with the 2 plays of the rim for Precious at the end, kind of just sealed it. And that was the most. That was the majority of the offense for the Raptors. So I thought Pascal still did give you a decent game overall. Again, we're being a little spoiled right now because he's giving us like 30. He's, you know, grabbing 10 rebounds regularly. But when you look at the game overall tonight, 39 minutes, 17 points for Pascal. Hit 2 threes, got to the free throw line a little bit. 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, a block. You know, he gave you quite a bit. I think maybe not necessarily like the all-star type of numbers that he's been giving recently, but still a decent effort from Pascal. Thought OG Anunoby, once again, super efficient in his role, just like he was against Milwaukee, where he had 22 points on 10 shots. This time he has 22 points on 13 shots, difference being that he didn't get to the free throw line 8 times. He only got there twice, but still knocked down 4 threes on back-to-back games. So that's really nice to see that his 3-point shot is coming back around. He's in a great rhythm right now with his 3, which is good because the Raptors definitely need him to play off the ball, to capitalize, and the ball's going to swing to him. I think that's the one thing with OG is there's 1 or 2 sequences of the game where he kind of holds the ball just a few beats too long. Like, he really just, like, tries to force the issue sometimes when, you know, he should just continue to trust the pass, because the people were going to pass to OG, right? There's a play where Pascal had a very open Gary Trent Jr., but Gary was cold. Pascal decides to drive it 1 extra step and to kick it to OG instead. And it was a great decision. OG made the 3. But guys are going to look for OG. The team respects OG. The thing is, though, with Fred in the rhythm that he's in, with Pascal in the rhythm that he's in, he just might not have as many opportunities. But it's so far mostly been Scotty sacrificing. You know, but OG's still trying to get his. And that's good. I actually really like that approach because the Raptors do need him to be aggressive. But he can be probably more efficient and most efficient when he's in this sort of role where he's playing off of other guys. And today, just like in the Milwaukee Bucks game, super efficient outing from OG. You definitely needed the offense from him because for the start there, he was the only guy who could really shoot. He was making some pretty good closeouts. His energy defensively was also pretty high, especially in the second half. A couple of you know, nice rotations to force guys into turnovers, force guys to pick up their pivot foot and get called for travels, stuff like that. So that, and then you also, you get the three steals from OG as well, because, you know, that's what he does. He's very, very active. And then, yeah, I mean, I talked about Gary, but I think Gary's getting, like, good shots. He's just not making them. The issue is, though, he wasn't contributing in other areas, right? Because 4 of 12 was a bad shooting night. 2 of 8 was a bad three-point shooting night, although he definitely had some good looks. So keep taking them. Like, there's no issue with specifically, I guess, the shots that he did take in this game. But 0 rebounds, 1 assist, 0 steals. He got 3 blocks, which I got to really go back and evaluate what these 3 blocks were. I don't fully remember over the course of the play, but it just didn't feel like he impacted the game at all. Obviously, if he made some shots, he would have had a good game. But I think one thing that Gary's done really well this season is he's not necessarily relying on that. A lot of shooters are kind of one-dimensional. They got to knock down shots. If they make a good percentage of their shots, they have a good game. If they don't, they have a bad game. And Gary kind of was that kind of guy, at least last year in Tampa when we first got to see him in a Raptors jersey. This season, though, the improvement for him has been rounding out his game, making a couple of extra passes, right? We've been consistently sort of seeing him about 2-3 assists a game, which is, you know, not that many, but still he doesn't have the ball that often, so it's not that easy for him to get assists. You know, he's obviously been contributing with the defense. I thought today his defense was kind of just like not that impactful as well. So what are you really doing with the shots not dropping? And I think the Gary tonight was didn't really feel like he was able to impact the game as much. Of course, it was very encouraging, though, that he was able to turn it on in the fourth quarter. That's when the Raptors needed it the most. You know, he was able to knock down those 2 threes. He was able to feed Pascal for a layup. And, you know, we know that when Gary is sort of in the rhythm, he can be a very, very effective player. But sometimes it does feel like, okay, if he's not going to make an open jumper, then the next play he's going to try to gamble for a steal and it's going to put the team out of rotation, something like that. Like, you do want to see more consistency from him, because that's the one thing from Gary that I've really enjoyed this year, is seeing him consistently give the team something, even on nights where he's not hitting the three that well. And honestly, there's things that Gary, in Gary's scoring game, that he can score outside of just hitting jumpers, right? I mean, obviously that's primarily what he does, but we've seen the footwork to be able to attack a closeout, to drive inside, to sort of make little push floaters, to be able to finish at the basket. Even the mid-range game is there for him as well. Sometimes I almost feel like if the three's really not dropping for him, get to the mid-range a few times, just get yourself some easy baskets, right out in transition for like a little layup, you know, just something to get you going. And yeah, you know, I thought Gary did a good job of turning his game around, but in the first half, it felt like it was very, very empty production from him. Aside from that, I mean, I thought Nick did a good job. I'm not sure what he said at halftime, but I just imagine him yelling at the team for being down, you know, double digits to a team that, I mean, come on, like, Raptors were clearly better than what Utah was putting out there today. You know, Nick took a tech, which was fun. It feels like it's, you know, when we first got to know Nick and the first couple of seasons we saw Nick, he was constantly picking up techs. He was, you know, I'm not saying this man was Rasheed Wallace, but like he was definitely yelling ball don't lie at least at some points, because it felt like he was just always in referee's ears. He's still like campaigning because that's still part of his job, but it's been a while since Nick has taken a tech. So you could tell that he's been trying to show restraint, but I can't blame him. The way the Raptors were playing in the first half, it would take a lot of restraint from a very, very good man not to do a little bit of yelling, some therapeutic yelling. And you know, Nick picked himself up a tech off a couple of phantom plays in a row where the Raptors got slapped with 3 fouls. I'm not saying that turned the team around. I think mostly it was Fred who turned the team around, but I thought Nick coached a good game, managed the rotations well. Again, I continue to really enjoy the way he's setting up his rotation, where he's going bigger with these groups. It's really working defensively. Yeah, that's a good game from Nick. And of course, after the game, Nick had one of my favorite quotes, where he was talking about Fred VanVleet and his third quarter. And he said, quote, "Freddie had a pretty good third quarter. He had 7 deflections." Now, of course, he said other things as well to compliment what Fred was doing. But I just love that's Nick's mindset. Forget the fact that he had 24 points on a perfect 8 of 8 shooting. He had 7 deflections. And honestly, some of those deflections were very key. You know, like, he was single-handedly creating stops, whether that was a block or 2 steals that Fred was able to generate And then that was able to turn into transition opportunities. So I love Nick's mindset there. And I think, you know what? It's a sign of a good coach. It's a sign of a healthy locker room that after a really poor first half, they're able to turn it around. Now, it'd be even healthier if they just didn't get off the bad starts. But alas, the ability to sort of flick that switch, turn it around, that's exactly what they did against Milwaukee. That game was obviously more impressive considering the opposition. But it was the same kind of thing here today. And his team responded. And it wasn't just Fred getting red hot. It was also guys coming in and playing with energy. When you see the picture, the image of Chris Boucher exhausted on the bench, that's a guy who Nick has gone through. Because Nick has benched this guy a few times, even gave him lots of stick in the media. And obviously, you know, he just wasn't playing well. Everyone can see it, right? To go from that Chris to what we've seen in the last month has been beautiful. And the energy is there. He's responding to Nick's challenges. And yeah, I mean, hopefully other guys on the end of the bench can do a little bit better as well. But realistically, the core pieces that the Raptors need, the core eight, let's say, which is their starting five plus the three centers off their bench, they're all healthy now. They're all responding. They're all giving Nick great effort. And you just can't be mad at that at all. A couple of other quotes from the team before I wrap up the podcast with the three stars. Fred VanVleet, as always, excellent on the podium. He had a quote, "I'm going to be honest. I always think I'm the best player in the gym. Sometimes I'm right. Sometimes I'm wrong," which is very honest. And it speaks to his mentality. It really does. Because, you know, he's given us similar quotes in the past where he was talking about his improved finishing this year. And he said, "In my mind, I'm so crazy. I think everybody's the same height." You know, and obviously he's the shortest guy out there almost every single game. But you love that mentality. Sometimes you need some irrational confidence, especially for a guy that small. Like, you need irrational confidence to dominate the NBA floor when you're shorter than certain podcasters. Fred also said, quote, "I'm proud of the fact that we have five guys averaging over 15 points per game, that is. I think that speaks to the way we play the game," which is totally true. The Raptors do have an unselfish offense. Having said that, though, sometimes you got to be selfish to sort of get the team going. And I wouldn't say it was like a team effort in the third quarter. It was a Fred effort, and the team followed him. But still, yeah, that is really nice. And even a game like this, right, where a lot of guys weren't really shooting it that well, all five starters consistently finished in double digits, right? Gary with 10, Fred with 37, Scotty with 11, OG with 22, Pascal with 17. So, I mean, probably average it out. Probably guys each, you know, comes out to an average about 15, 16 points per person. They do a really good job of moving the ball around. You know, that's Nick's offense. The opportunities are going to be there. You know, if you continue to trust the pass. And yeah. And then lastly from Fred, he said, quote, "I really thought it was the defense, to be honest with you, in terms of how the run sort of got going." And you know what? The Raptors did start to play better defense in the third quarter. I thought even in the second quarter, there were moments where their defense was picking up. Again, when you look at the stats breakdown, Utah had 40 points in the first quarter and then 30 points in the third quarter. There were a lot more possessions in that third quarter, plus they were hitting a lot of threes, and then only 14 points in the fourth quarter. So generally speaking, when the bench was in, the defense was actually pretty solid. And that's the one thing that the bench can always give you, is consistent defense and hustle and effort. And you put that along with the fact that Fred was, you know, basically Klay Thompson for a quarter. And it was pretty damn good. So in terms of your three stars to wrap up the game, obviously first star is going to Fred VanVleet. 37 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, 2 steals, a block, 36 minutes, plus 9, perfect 9-9 from the free throw line, 4-12 from 3, 12-22 from the field overall. So he wasn't really shooting the ball very well in the first half. He was still taking a lot of catch-and-shoot threes, but they're heavily contested. Clearly, that's the number one item on the scouting report when teams are playing Toronto, is make sure you cover Fred like he's Steph, because that's what he's shooting like right now. Actually, that's not true. He's shooting better than Steph right now. Steph's having an off month. But essentially, he's getting that kind of coverage. So, you know, you definitely need to sort of temper your expectations sometimes, because you can't expect him to make all of the tough shots, but clearly he was able to turn it around. Willed the team to life. Once again, if you haven't seen this quarter from Fred, you have to go watch it. It's all over the internet. It's the perfectly time for his all-star push. I think votes were counting as double today for some reason. So yeah, go out there and vote Fred VanVleet. But mostly just appreciate Fred. All the stuff about, you know, is he too small? Is he you know, is he able to play point guard? Like, even last year, or even sometimes this year, I still people say, I don't really know if Fred's like a point guard. I think he's like a shooting guard, but in a point guard's body. Like, quite frankly, you don't know basketball. Fred's a point guard, and Fred is going to be an all-star as well. He's been playing great. To be honest, he deserves all three stars, but I'm going to hand out the other two anyway. I think number two star for me is Chris Boucher. I think that meme of him going being so exhausted on the bench just took it over the top for me, but I really loved his effort. He's been consistently playing really well. And yeah, 13 points, 5 rebounds, 4 offensive off the bench, and assist, 2 steals in 20 minutes, 5 of 9 from the field. A lot of those were in transition. He was just busting his butt, trying to make plays on both ends of the floor. The extra hustle was really needed on a night where the Raptors looked tired. Nobody looked more tired than Chris, but the Raptors clearly were tired. This is their, you know, third game in 4 nights. This is their 4th game in 6 nights. Like, guys are tired, and they're going to play again on Sunday. So, you know, they could probably use the day off here, Nick, maybe if you want to cancel practice on the weekend. But yeah, Chris has consistently delivered the energy, and I just love that shot of him. I really genuinely appreciate how hard and how unselfish his effort has been of late. It's been it deserves to be richly rewarded, I think, because it's exactly what this team has needed. When Chris has been playing well, the bench has been playing well. When the bench plays well, the Raptors generally are going to win games. And so he's been great. And then your third star, I'm going to give that to Pascal Siakam. 17 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals. I just thought the way he led the third quarter, led the group in the fourth quarter was just so important. You needed somebody to maintain that momentum, because the last thing you wanted to do was Fred to do all of that to give you a lifeline, to give you a small, like, 4-point lead or whatever it was. And then you go out, and as soon as he sits, you know, you give up the lead, you let Utah do what they're doing, you let Eric Paschal dunk all over the place and yell at, I guess, nobody. Literally, there's nobody in the building. I don't know who you're yelling at. You're just yelling for clout at that point. That's the last thing you wanted. So you needed someone to come in and maintain that momentum. And it wasn't like Pascal was doing what Fred was doing, but he was doing a really good job of setting the tone for the team and just getting them good sequences, good offense, so that the Raptors can sort of maintain their lead, build the lead, and then close out the game. Your Gerald Henderson Award winner is going to go to, obviously, Eric Paschal. You know, there's a good choice to be, you know, it's tough picking between Paschal and Elijah Hughes. Elijah Hughes was knocking down the 7 threes, but Paschal was just nailing all sorts of contested looks. He was getting fouled for 3 as well. His energy was incredible. This guy was giving you basically like a Thanasis type of level of energy and extraness off the bench. And you know what? I feel like there should be a stat in the box score for just a guy being extra. And, you know, it seems to really put the Jazz off to a great start, which was nice. But yeah, he eventually cooled off, but still a very good night for Eric Paschal. 29 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 10 of 21 shooting, 2 of 7 from 3. But he also got to the free throw line 10 times, which is a very impressive night. Last thing before I go, I definitely wanted to highlight one specific play that I forgot to talk about, but I just saw it in my notes as I'm trying to wrap the show here. There was a play in the fourth quarter where Paschal drove, and he dumped it off to Precious Achiuwa, who had a very, very clean look at about a 5-foot hook shot that, let's say you had Scotty in that situation in the dunker spot, or if you had Ken Burch in the dunker spot in that situation, they would just go up for the little floater. Whether they make it or miss it, that's a good shot. For some reason, Precious doesn't go for that shot. Now, maybe the reason is he generally isn't very good at making those, even though those are mostly simple shots. Turn down that shot. And then he holds the ball on the baseline. He has Hassan Whiteside on him. The play's kind of dead. There's some momentum on the play. Precious clears out, waves Paschal out of the lane. I got this. I was like, okay, wow, Precious is really going to go ISO here. Tries to ISO drive against Whiteside along the baseline. Gets to about the edge of the paint. Loses his footing. Slips. He's sitting down on the ground. Has to kick it back out. I think there's like probably 3 seconds at this point. The Raptors chuck up something just to avoid the turnover. Everybody needs to know the role on the team. And I think Precious has done a much better job of knowing his role, but that play just can't happen. It just can't happen. Everybody needs to know the role on the team. That play was pretty funny. Now, it didn't hurt the Raptors in the end, but these are kind of sequences where the Raptors look back on it, the film session, all this kind of stuff. These are the things for the team to fine-tune Because even though they're on a 5-game win streak, a lot of it has come against teams that have been banged up or, you know, depleted due to injuries or COVID or whatever. You have to sort of maintain this momentum and sort of clean up these little things, because the Raptors are doing the little things better on the whole. And that's why they're on a 5-game win streak. That's why they're up to 19-17 on the season. If we're going to look at the standings real quickly before we go, the Raptors were already in seventh coming into tonight's game. They win. And yeah, why is my computer being so slow? They're still seventh. This is okay, less exciting, but you know, Cleveland is only one game back of Cleveland, so they're making some progress at least. And yeah, the key thing is just keep winning, though. Just keep winning, keep moving up, and you know, the good times will roll. So thanks everyone for listening to the Reaction Podcast. You can find all episodes of the Reaction Podcast along with all episodes of the Raptors show wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for the Raptors Show with Will Liu. You'll find it there. And you know, when you do, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. So thanks everyone for listening. And I'll be back on the weekend to recap the Raptors' next game. Peace.